Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah, A-Dream, in the building, shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in, look.
Yes, sir.
Look, we came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. Positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging that gold, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Mexico.
So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down in the mouth to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
From politics to the current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
Coming to you live and streaming to all four points of the globe. It's your girl, Brooklyn born and Crown Heights raised. Living life and breathing life. It's Bree, baby.
Well, peace and blessings. You have reached the Bree Life Radio Show, and I'm your host, Bree. And tonight, we are discussing part three of a discussion that's been going on for the last 2 weeks. We're part three in our discussion of what it means to be Black in America now. Tonight, again, I'm going to be joined by some very distinguished guests. Alex Lee, he is a TV and movie producer. George Cook, who is the Hillside president of the Board of Education in his district. He's also an author and a community activist. And later on in our discussion, we'll also be joined by Dr. Jeremiah Hackley, who is also an author, a pastor in D.C., and he wrote a book that is pretty much decoding the Willie Lynch letter. So without further ado, before we bring on our esteemed guests, there's a couple of house cleaning things that I'd like to take care of. I want to remind everyone that PS161 is hosting Career Day. That's taking place on May 27th. Between the hours of 8:45 and 11:45 a.m. And I'm asking that, you know, if you are an entrepreneur or if you work in corporate America and you want to come to the school and talk to the students, each person will have two classes that they'll have an opportunity to walk around and talk to. So that's taking place again on May 27th between the hours of 8:45 a.m. and 11:45 a.m. And if you're interested in participating, which I hope you are, you can reach me at BriLifeRadio@gmail.com. That's BriRadio BriLifeRadio@gmail.com. Okay. Also, I want to talk about the fundraiser that we're trying to get off the ground for Bree Life Radio, and 15% of the proceeds will be going to PS161. If you've been following the show for the last month or two, I've been talking about how the teachers are having to come out of their pockets to purchase school supplies for the students. And that's a huge hardship, especially when we know that teachers are not really paid what their weight in gold. So if you could just please go to my Facebook page, you can follow me at Sabrina Bree Hassan at Facebook. You can do it at Bree Life Radio at Facebook, Bree Life Radio at Twitter. If you have any problems trying to get to the Eventbrite page from the link on the page, please feel free to reach out to me and I'll walk you through it. You can donate as little as $10, and trust me, it will be going a long way for the students, because it's awful that they shouldn't have school supplies, they shouldn't have paper, construction paper, pencils, chalk. I mean, these are the basics. So that just goes to show you how severe our state of economy is when we can't even provide the teachers with the necessary tools to educate our children. And also, I want to let you know that we have a feature now on Bree Life Radio. You can join the chat room. So if you're following us on blogtalkradio.com/Bree Life, you can click on the link to find the chat room, and you can talk to me via the chat room if you don't want to come online. So, again, you would do that by following the link to Bree Life Radio, I'm sorry, blogtalkradio.com/Bree Life. So, now that we've gotten all that out of the way, I want to bring on one of our esteemed guests. He is George Cook, the Hillside president of the Board of Education in his district. George.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, peace and blessings. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Yourself?
Good, good, good. I'm doing well. So now we are in part three of our discussion, and I know you joined us for the first time last week, which we really appreciated, and just to let the listeners know, that was one of our highest-rated shows, so I just want to thank you, you know, for your contribution to the show.
I'm honored to have been part of it, and it makes me feel kind of good.
Well, you know what, until we get at least Alex on the line, tell me, what's been going on in your world? I've been following your blog. Why don't you tell the listeners about AA Reports and what you try to accomplish by having the blog?
What we do with AA Reports is we try to cover stories that don't get that much attention, or we try to get them the attention that I believe they deserve. We normally catch stories early on, as with Trayvon Martin. Right now we're with the Marissa Alexander case, that's the woman who shot into the ceiling to scare off her abusive husband. It looks like she may be getting a retrial. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yes. If you could, for the listeners that didn't have an opportunity to listen to the show last week, and just for the listeners out there, the call-in number is 424-220-1862. That number, again, is 424-220-1862. We want you to call in and not just listen. We want to hear from you. We want you to ask our panel questions that may be on your mind. So give us a call. And if you could just, for the listeners that might not have followed us last week, give them a brief overview of this case, or actually it doesn't even have to be brief. You just can tell us, you know, in great detail as you know the facts to be. Tell us about this Marissa Alexander case and what's going on.
Well, a couple of years ago, Marissa Alexander, she was in a situation that you would think would fit Stand Your Ground to a T. She was in an abusive relationship where her husband was beating her. She was pregnant. She had gotten a restraining order against him. One day something happened where she came home and he was coming after her. She managed to evade him, get to her bedroom where she kept the pistol. She got the pistol. He came in the room after. She fired into the ceiling. She didn't fire him. She fired into the ceiling to scare him off.
Mm-hmm.
Make a long story short, she's the one that wound up getting arrested, and she's in jail now because the judge claims, remind you now, she was pregnant. But the presiding judge said, our presiding prosecutor said, she could have gotten out of, she could have went out a window. She didn't try hard enough to get out the house. She's pregnant. He's abusive. She has a restraining order. If stand your ground serves any purpose, that stands your ground. So She's facing up to 20 years in prison as we speak. Because it's gotten some, the case has gotten some notoriety, it's got some publicity. Her brother, I believe it was her brother, went on Michael Bazin last week at his past. So the case has gotten some publicity, and that's kind of pushed him to at least grant her a retrial, which I'm guessing, as crazy as Florida is, that may be as good as she can get right now.
Wow. And how long has she actually been waiting for sentencing?
I believe about a year and a half now, because this happened way before the Trayvon Martin case.
Mm-hmm.
But she's been in jail for a while. She's been in jail
and
for a while now.
She's facing
up to 20 years based on what she was actually in the state of Florida, based on what she was charged with. She could spend up to 20 years in prison. And she's hit with the maximum. And it's
unbelievable.
And what's surprising, now I'm waiting for where are all the women's organizations now? Where are all of them coming out for women's?
Well, I wrote her a letter last week, and I hope she gets it. And it offers her some encouragement, because I really feel for her. You know, I really can. Soon as I read your blog about this, I was like, and I've been talking about it with people, and I, for all the listeners, I encourage them to go online and try to find and go to AA Reports. Could you tell the listeners where they can find your blog so that they can get the information? Listeners out there, this is a woman of color who is facing a horrendous, unjust situation, and she needs our support. And I think people should, write her and encourage her that, there are people on the outside that are aware of what's going on. And this is a perfect opportunity for us to show just how united we are and supportive we are. So could you tell people how to find your blog and maybe follow the case so that they could possibly reach out to her?
Yes. You can find my blog at aareports.com. Her
sure.
Story is there. Actually, it's aareports.com. I have something about her getting a possible retrial today, and there's also the first story, which garnered a lot of traffic, a lot of people came, because I'm surprisingly, at the time I posted it, a lot of people still didn't know about it. Like I said, Michael Bazin did something on it recently. I think CNN did a little bit on it, so it's starting to get some publicity for this young lady. But it's been a tough haul, and a good thing that I can see from the responses is, regardless of backgrounds, regardless of people's affiliations politically or whatever, there seems to be a lot of support for us, so that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring Alex Leith on the line and bring him into this conversation. And I want us to, until we can get Dr. Hackley on the line, I want us to kind of touch on the conversation you and I were having today, George, about the importance of people voting and what the mindsets of people are, because this is a systemic problem. This also goes back to that innate, self-hatred thing that I've been talking about and we've been discussing in our three-part discussion about what it is to be black in America now. But, we can't deal with now until we deal with the past. So we're going to bring Alex Leith on the line. Peace and blessings, Alex. You're being joined by Sister Bree and George.
What's up, George? What's up, Bree? What's
How
going?
You doing?
Good.
What's up?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. How y'all hanging in there?
Just
doing
fine.
All righty.
So, Alex, I see that you've been on just a couple of minutes. Have you been following what we've been talking about? We've been talking about the Marissa Alexander case that George has been following and posting on his blog.
Yeah, I've been listening, and it seems like our justice system has become the injustice system. And it seems like Florida is becoming the old Mississippi. I don't know what's going on in Florida these days. They need to revamp that whole stand your ground law and probably revamp the whole judicial system that's there.
Well, I think the whole judicial system in this country really needs to be revamped. But speaking of the law and speaking of politics, George, you know, you want to share with our listeners what we were kind of touching on this afternoon, if you remember, we were the voting and how people, you know, have this perspective that they live in a tenement building versus living in a house. They don't feel that they have the same rights because of the tax structure and things of that nature. Please, you know, let's touch on that before we dive into our topic tonight.
Yeah, you have like a lot of times you may have, depending where you live at, you may have a huge percentage of renters, whatever, and some renters, they, for whatever reason, they don't vote. Maybe they don't feel vested in the town. Maybe they don't plan on being there long. But if you were talking about whether or not you pay property taxes, when you call the police, you expect the police to come. When you call for an ambulance, you expect the ambulance to come. You still expect drivers to be picked up. You still get the services, and these things should be important to you. Just because you don't own a home, that doesn't mean you don't count. And you have to vote. These are at your local level, like to tie it back to the Marissa Alexander situation. You have a state dominated by a Republican legislator. Could you imagine if the people in Florida got together and voted, and these people knew there was a chance they could be voted out? You could get the stand your ground laws overturned. Things like that can be done when people vote at the local level. Voting at the local level, in many ways, is more important than voting for president. That's where change is. That's where you see the things that really affect your day-to-day life. And it doesn't make a difference if you're a renter, if you're a homeowner. You have to vote. You can drive into any other neighborhood, any other community, and you can see the importance of voting. But for some reason, I'm not voting. They're all no good. It doesn't make a difference who we put in. And it does make a difference who you put in, and it makes a difference how you hold them accountable. And that's what I think we as African-Americans slack up. We don't. Once a guy gets in, as long as he's the right color, he says the right things, he's charismatic, when he gives speeches, he can stay in forever regardless of his track record. And we have to stop and ask these guys and women, what are you doing? What have you done lately? What about we needed a new school? Where's this new park? We don't hold our leaders accountable. And I think that's a big issue with black voters and with black politicians. Once they get in, they get comfortable feeling, well, I'm the right color because I don't have to worry about ever getting voted out. I think that's an issue.
Yeah, George. Let me play devil's advocate for a second. Try to come at you another way with this thing here. I vote because I know my ancestors died, so I could have the privilege to vote. They were hung, they were burned, they were strangled. There was all these different horrendous things. All these atrocities were committed against our ancestry because we wanted to write the vote. So out of respect for them, I tend to vote, okay? But I have lost my vigor over the last decade or so, which started with George Bush and his brother Jeb tainting the voting process with the cheating that went on in 2000, okay? So we know that these things can be fixed, manipulated, tainted. Supposedly the most, you know, of all human rights, the most one that's upheld high, the right to vote, was tainted right before our eyes. It was manipulated right in front of us. The next thing I want to address is with all the people of color in office, in politics, various stages of politics, we got them all over the place now, okay? Nothing seems to be changing for us. And you have to ask yourself, what's going on? What's the problem? So that's what I address to you at this particular time.
As far as the system being tainted, the worst thing you can do is you can't change the system if you drop out of it. That's what you have to understand. I know a lot of brothers, they voted for Obama, and that's it. They never came back. And when you drop out of a system, it just doesn't happen. The more legitimate votes, there are always going to be way more legitimate votes than bad votes. The more people that vote, the more people come out, the more you avoid, like what happened in Florida, I believe that was 2000.
Right.
That was a close election. That was a close election. There was room for something to go. There was room. If you weren't intending to do something dirty, most likely it's going to be in a close, not so highly contested election. That's why we have to come out to vote. We have to make our voices heard. You made a great point. Our ancestors, hell, our grandparents, some of our great were beaten for us to have the right to vote, and that's for so nonchalantly to just throw it to the side. To just, oh, no, not today. I don't feel like it. You know, I've seen people come to a school to pick up their kids. They can vote right there and there, but they go home. They know the moment their phone rings, the moment they start cooking, they're not coming back out the house. And if you want to be taken seriously, and again, you made a great point about black politicians not holding up their end, but how do we hold them accountable? I mean, if I come in, I do a bad job, or I don't do that great of a job, but I get reelected three times. You're telling me I must be doing a good job. So what's my incentive to do anything different? That's the thing is, these guys get in, they become incumbents. They really don't have to worry about getting thrown out of office. And just so the public knows, what happens is when that young guy comes along, when that young lady comes along and challenge them, the first time that person has no shot. Second time, they build in traction. What happens in those cases that a lot of people don't know, that incumbent eases up to that person and says, look, you're the heir apparent. Let's work together.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have to realize. That person doesn't all of a sudden just beat that person. That person kind of stepped to the side. And they made some type of deal, and that person slid. And it's very rare that a new person just comes in and takes over.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy that's been sitting there for 15 years, 20 years as your councilman, and that park that was torn up 10 years ago was still torn up. But every time he walks and knocks on doors, he says that park is going to be fixed. But who goes to a council meeting and says, why isn't that park fixed? You told us we would have a police mini station here. Where is that police mini station? You promised to get this off the street. You promised a bus stop here. But if nobody goes there and challenges that person, why should they do it? It's our fault our politicians don't do what they should do for us. We don't hold them accountable. We're so happy that a black person has an office that we let everything else slide.
Mm-hmm.
There's something else. There's two things I want you to touch on, George. One, if you remember in our conversation earlier this afternoon, share with Alex and the listeners what you were saying about this one area in your district where 500 and some odd people live, and how many people came out to vote for the presidential? Was it the presidential race?
It was a regular. We have a little area of town, and all the politicians, we call it the nut because it's hard to crack. But the funny thing is, there are actually over 500 registered voters in this one little area, but they don't vote. The last election we had in town, 75 people from that area voted. Now, the presidential election was a pretty different story because that was Obama.
Mm-hmm.
That was different. Everybody and their mother came out and waited 4 or 5 hours. But for a regular election where, like, again, these are people that, this is a part of town that's near Newark and Irvington, which if you live in New Jersey, you kind of know that's not a bad part. That's not a good place to live at the intersection of both of them. They need all the police protection. If anybody needs services in town, they need it. They need to make sure they're taken care of, but they don't come out to vote. And it drives us crazy. You get the list, and wow, it's 500 voters in there. No matter what, they just don't care. They're not involved. They're not active. And people have such a negative attitude towards politics and politicians in general. This apathy, the voter apathy, it's hard to get people to vote in. A lot of that, again, it's politicians' fault. They don't do what they say they're going to do, and people get down. It's a double edged sword. With us, you got to vote. Well, they didn't do anything. He didn't do anything. Yeah, he said that. Well, they all say that. And even the new guy, new girl coming along that means well, wants to do well, gets batted over the head with, you guys are all no good. You guys are all the same. And we have to understand. Yes, they're bad politicians, as they would every other group. But we got to get behind. If somebody's really doing something right, we have to get behind them early on, put that person in office, and then even no matter how much we like them, hold that person accountable. If they promise to do something, make sure they do it. If they don't do it, have them explain to you why it couldn't be done or why it wasn't done then. Put their feet to the fire. Make them uncomfortable at council meetings. Make them uncomfortable whenever they're, when you see them, make them want to turn around and run into a store. Make them, you know, don't do anything except talk to you. That's what you have. If politicians could walk down the street and just wave hi all day, they would love it. They hate that one old lady that stops them. What about this? They hate that.
Right.
Now there's no prepared speech. There's nobody to hide behind. You have to talk to that person. And we don't.
And, George, you know, I, and what's very discouraging for people, and I hear you, and I definitely, you know, understand what you're talking about. I believe in what you're saying because we constantly have to fight through these things, and you keep using the word accountability. That's a huge problem, and we're going to talk more about accountability as the show goes on. But the reason why people have a lack of faith is because when these people are trying to get voted in, they're in every neighborhood, kissing the kids, shaking hands, doing this, doing that. And then, you know, they're civil servants. And then they get in the office and get voted in. They become more like self-servants, okay? Because now once they get voted in, they get pulled into the room with the rest of the knuckleheads. Okay, you're one of us now. This is how we do things. And blah, 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 blah. Now you can't find them. You call the office. You got to speak to some phone answering person, some receptionist who got a leak, who got to deliver a message. They may get the message. They may not. You mentioned New York. This new kid coming up in New York. I'm from New York. I don't know who this new kid is, but I know Bloomberg, and I know Bloomberg has been cheating his way to stay in that office through the last two. He was supposed to have been gone. This is the most manipulative, crooked person that's been sitting in that mayoral seat in New York for what, four terms now or something? I don't
four
even terms. Know
he terms. He actually changed the law so he could serve another term.
That's right. That's why I mean crooked. He changed the law so he could serve another term. How crooked is that? And then this is what Bloomberg does, okay? Every time New York faces budget deficits or need money for this, need money for that, the first thing he does, and this is a billionaire now, Bloomberg is a billionaire. The first thing he does is send out the ticket parade. He sent out the tow trucks. He sent out the cops to give tickets. That's what he does because the city needs money. So he's a billionaire. He don't care, but he sends them out for the average working people, checking the meters, checking your stickers, checking this, just writing tickets, towing people's cars because the city needs money, and that's how he gets it. Okay, it's that kind of nonsense that go on in politics.
My car was towed three times. He's getting it.
right. Oh, that's part of a plan. I mean, most cities' economic lifeline runs through traffic court. It's harder to beat a traffic ticket than it is to beat a murder rap.
Well, you know, that's interesting. Since we're talking about And there's another point that I wanted George to talk about, and that's the most recent addition to his blog, and it's about this new issue that has arisen with some kids or someone attacking a watch patrolman.
Yeah.
What was that, George?
Another neighborhood watch incident. It happened back in 2010, and the trial is just starting now. But it was another neighborhood watch incident. 15-year-old black kid walking through the neighborhood. Two white kids, whatever reason, however it started, the guy gets beat up, lacerations to his head, broken wrist. And now this is two guys, not one, two. And their defense is they felt threatened. That's their defense for beating up a child. And this is a 15-year-old. He wasn't 6'3", like Trayvon Martin. This was a kid. This was a baby. Two men, mind you, not two teens. Two men beat him up and then with a straight face told the police they felt threatened. Fortunately, this was Baltimore, so they got arrested. But he's just going to trial now. But they've gotten the trial. They've already gotten a trial by judge. They don't want to face a jury. They've already waived that because they know it's going to happen if they get a trial by jury. So it's going to be interesting how that one goes.
Yeah, I'd like to hear how that one goes. I'm going to look for that one.
As we are still on this topic and we're talking about law enforcement and things like that. I think we have a caller from 708-953. We're going to pick that caller up and see what they might have to say.
Hello?
Okay, I guess I'm not picking that caller up.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi. You've reached the Free Life Radio Show?
Hi.
Where are you calling from, caller?
Chicago.
Quentin?
Yes.
Well, hello. This is Quentin from Chicago. Let's welcome our caller.
How you doing?
Hey, how you doing? It's George and Alex, right?
What's up, Quentin?
What's going on, Alex?
All right, man. It's all good. Having a serious discussion here.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of caught some of it. I just had a question I wanted to ask George, or some things I wanted to run by him. And I heard you when you kind of play devil's advocate. I kind of want to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to know I want to ask you this question. If I did not want you to come to my house for whatever reason, I just didn't like you, would you force your way in?
No. Once the person tells you they're not interested, thank you, have a good day. What good does it do me to force my way in? Because now you're going to talk bad about me to even more people.
Well, see, that's kind of how I feel about voting. You know, I just feel like if I have to die, get beat, and fight you for the right for something that you don't want me to have in your so-called system or country, then I just kind of think that's one of our problems as African Americans. We always feel like we have to have the right to do something. When if we're American, then we should already have it.
Mm. The problem is we don't.
Huh? Right. But that's my point.
The problem is we don't have it.
Right. Especially back then. You know, mm-hmm. back then we had to fight for. And I think it was all a trick in the first place to get you mm-hmm. to fight for something that you should have anyway, or rights that you have to read, to vote, to ride the front of the bus, all of these things, drink out of the same water fountain, eat, you know, in the same mm-hmm. restaurants. All of that, I believe, was done for psychological reasons. You know what I mean? So, and I just think we kind of putting the cart before the horse without healing before we attempt to correct a system that's corrupt and wants to be corrupt. Because, see, the heads of this particular system are corrupt. And,
amen.
And trust me, you're not going to beat them at their own game. You know what I mean? If they have to blatantly be wrong, which, of course, we can see that they have the power to do that, they will. I don't care how much you vote, how many people vote. If they want to stop you, they can, because it's their system.
Well, if I may jump in on that point, it's also synonymous, and I've heard quite a bit of discussion go on about who or how people feel about President Barack Obama being the president of the United States. And when I was asked that question during a one-on-one conversation, I said, I think it's wonderful, it's an achievement, but we can't be distracted, because here's the thing. He is the first. He is also not given access to everything that his predecessors have had access to. He is governing, but he's not really running the country. And there's a fundamental difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
That's true.
Well, sorry, George. You know why that is, Bree, though? Because we know, and it's not just Obama, but all his predecessors, they're figureheads. They don't really run the country. The president doesn't really run the country. He's the one out front. He's the one that you see. He's the one giving the speeches. He's the one signing the papers or whatever. But he's not the one running the country. It's like Clinton was saying. Those other people you never really see. They're so far behind the scenes. It's their system. Okay? When the president gets elected, hey, you won. Congratulations. Oh, it's a great thing. Okay, now come on in this room. Let's talk to you. They get him in the room, close the door. This is what you're going to do. A, B, C, D. They run the whole alphabet down, and they kick them back out of there and let them deal with the public.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's my point exactly. And we have to remember that when people are being so hard on the brother, they have to understand something, that this is not a system that he is really a part of. He was and none of his forefathers were a part of in designing. Plus, there are some closed associations, and we know what I'm talking about without saying it, that he's
right.
Definitely not participating in.
Mm-hmm.
So, and those are the let's say clubs that are really behind the scenes running the country.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean.
Right.
And I'm sorry for cutting you off, Brother Clinton. Please continue with your point and your question you wanted to ask George.
No, then again, I wanted to touch, too, on what you said about Obama, because the one thing I noticed about his predecessors is that they may have had their negative, people in the country had things that they didn't like about Kennedy, things they didn't like about whatever other president, Nixon, or whatever, but it never was because he was black. And it seems to be that everything this man does right, they still don't like him. You see what I'm saying? So
that's president a lack of respect. Such as mm-hmm. this president. And you know what's so ironic? I was listening to another talk show before preparing for coming online, and I heard a white professor say that he feels that President Obama has not been any more disrespected than his predecessor, George Bush.
That right there feels bold.
I said, are you kidding me? If that woman who put her finger in President Obama's face, first of all, she was able to stand there for more than 2 seconds doing that. Because if this was George Bush, Ronald Reagan, Daddy Bush, all those other presidents that happened to be of the same pigment, this woman was putting her finger in their faces. The Secret Service would have scooped her behind up off the tarmac, and we wouldn't even hear from that lady no more.
She'd be missing.
I think part of the reason for the disrespect Obama gets, I think a lot of his race, but a little bit of it goes on him, because when the guy from North Carolina yelled at you, lie, that was Obama's chance for everybody in their place right then and there. He let that slip. I mean, this man did this at a State of the Union address, and all Obama had to calmly do was didn't have to get loud, didn't have to get nasty, had to say, excuse me, I'm the president of the United States. And that would let everybody know right there, okay, this man is president. Get over it. We're going to have to deal with it. He let that go too easy, and that set the tone for people to blatantly and publicly just disrespect him, because you always hear them say, forget the man, respect the office, and that's going out the window. They're just even disrespecting the office now.
As if they wasn't going to do it anyway, George?
Huh?
As if they wasn't going to do it anyway, George?
Yeah.
You know?
They're just blatantly disrespecting the office. Now it's just over the top. In Julian District, there was no, that's the president, let's show some respect. That's just going out the window.
As far as they're concerned, the office can pay it.
Because some people can't even say president. They call the man Obama like, you know, like they work with him, like they're going to have drinks with him.
Yeah,
they won't even say president.
That's all. But, George, that's I want to say, too, if an African-American can make it all the way to the presidency and still get disrespected, that tells you what they think about us as far as their system is concerned. It doesn't make a difference to them how many of us vote, what position, the title that you hold, and you can see that even on the lower levels of jobs and management. You know, they don't care what position you hold. It, you know, to them, you still who you are in their eyes. You know what I mean?
But
I think that's what it is.
Fairness, all fairness, I'm going to cut you off, but in all fairness, you know, just because we get frustrated with the fact that we're constantly disrespected, we can't just throw our hands up and say, to hell with it, I'm not voting anymore. You know, we have to utilize this tool that we have for some benefit. We have to utilize it, because if we don't exercise our right to vote, we'll be in worse shape than what we are right now.
Exactly, and I think giving up is defeatist. They're giving them what they want. You know, or now we don't even have to try anything for us when they're not even voting. I mean, I know it's not a perfect system, it's the one we got, and we gotta learn to game it. We gotta learn to play within it. It's by no means perfect, but you can't win if you don't even play. And that's what I always tell people that say they're not gonna vote. You can't win if you don't even play.
Well,
you gotta vote.
To me, it's kind of like the game of chess, you know, and deception. It's not. I'm not saying give up, but what I am saying is, by put the cart before the horse, is that we cannot ignore what has happened to us mentally, and that's what I meant by, you know, the not wanting you to vote, not wanting you to read, and the beatings and the hangings and everything else that occurred that causes you mental. So that means that the majority of you are not going to vote because you don't even know how. You don't even care, because the gangbangers, the drug addicts, the alcoholics, the poverty stricken are the majority. So that's the reason why you're not going to even get enough people to vote. It's not so much, you know, the ones like me, you, and the rest of us are speaking on the phone right now may have this knowledge and understand that, but the ones that have been meant, that cannot, and their thinking process doesn't take them there, we have to help those people.
Yeah.
Else it's not going to work.
And that's what part three is written. I'm glad you're on the line, Quentin. That's why part three is so important to what does it mean to be black in America now is all about, because we need to discuss solution-based, grassroots ideas to begin to help those who have the mindset that cripples themselves and the community at large. You know, we have to look for solutions, because we could talk for days. We could talk every day of the week about this problem. But at some point, we have to put these words into action. And there are a lot of intelligent people in the world. There are a lot of intelligent people in this country that are people of color, that are educated, or that are just hardworking, common sense having individuals that know that if their communities are in dismay, then their very life and survival is at risk as well. So we need to begin to care about our brother and our sister. I started doing this thing on Facebook for my listeners that are Facebook friends of mine. You know, once a week I challenge about the 4,000 people that I can come into contact with at any point and on Facebook. And I challenge them to do one selfless act, and that is pick up the phone, stop what they're doing right now, pick up the phone, and call somebody that you haven't talked to in a while that you know that may be going through something. Because Alex and I, we know the difference that 5-minute time or conversation can do to change somebody's life. It can save someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're here now to start doing. I mean, Bree Life Radio, we're here to have these conversations and start using our tentacles and reaching out to the community in the best way that we can. So since we're on this topic, let's go around the table, and we'll start with George. What are some grassroots ideas that you might have implemented in your own community, or what future ideas do you have for some things that would help the community at large and to address the very thing that Quentin is talking about, and that is dealing with the mindset of the people. And you being a politician and a community activist, tell us what you would suggest.
One of the things I would suggest, especially for community activists, educate yourself, learn how the system works, and have small gatherings, 15, 20 people, have them out, educate the public as to how things work, educate people to what's going on, how decisions are made, and then come at your politicians, ask them to come speak. A lot of them, if they see that people understand what's going on, they will come out and speak. Yeah, have things at schools, have community forums, have the community come together, let everybody know that they matter. Like it was mentioned about the drug dealers and all those people. Those people are most likely not going to show up. But you have a lot of other people that do, a lot of working class people, you know, they're tired of the high taxes, they're tired of not getting services, they're tired of being scared to walk out their house. Those are the people you're trying to reach because they have something to fight for. If you can find somebody with something to fight for, those are the people that you go after. Because once you get them motivated, once you get them moving, you have a powerful force. But you have to find small things, anything. Community garden, something like that, just to get people out of the house and working together. You can start something as simple as that and take that community garden, and maybe a year or two later, you have politicians contacting you because you have a small block of people there that are doing something positive. You're an asset mm-hmm. to your community now, and that's how you build things up. You start on a local level. A lot of people laugh when I say this, but start a Boy Scout troop, start a Girl Scout troop. A lot of guys love sports. Coach at the volunteer level. Coach Pop Warner. Get into your community. Be active. Don't complain about the kids. They're all on the street. They don't do nothing. Well, help give them something to do. Go to the community center. If you have a certain skill, maybe you teach karate. Maybe you swim. Maybe you're an artist. You do something that's not offered at the community. So go there and volunteer. Like, look, you give me an hour on Sunday or Saturday afternoon, whatever. I'll volunteer to come in and teach these kids. You'll be surprised how many kids may like something, but they have no outlet. They have no place to go where they can do that. Those are things you can do in the community that really don't cost nothing. You'll be surprised how people that run recreation centers and things like that would love to help out because they're strapped. They don't have a lot of money. Anybody that will volunteer willing to help would be great. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do at the grassroots level to make your community better, but you have to be willing to work. You have to be willing to work together to make these things happen. And unfortunately, in some cases, you have to be willing to do a lot of the work at first. There's always one or two people that get stuck doing the majority of the work until it really gets off the ground. But that's how you build. That's how you build up. And you, no matter whatever you do at a grassroots level, you have to be helping people. People are being helped if they see, okay, this benefits me. Your organization, whatever it is you're doing, only becomes stronger. You become more powerful. And now it's not a matter of will politicians or the powers that be deal with you. They have to deal with you. They have to come to you. With older seniors. See, if seniors ask for something, they get it immediately because seniors vote. And that's what we have to learn. When we make ourselves a force, when we show, look, if you don't do what we said, you won't be in office next year. And nothing works better than that. So we have to learn how to organize, how to take care of ourselves is a big part of it. We got to take care of ourselves. Stop waiting for somebody to give us something. Stop waiting, well, when we get money, we'll give you this. No. A lot of people have skill sets in the community that they can volunteer to help out with PALs, recreation centers, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, after school things at school. We have skills. Let's use them to benefit our community.
I want you to hold that thought. I believe this is Dr. Hackley coming on the line, and then I want to ask Quentin something really quick. Peace and blessings, Dr. Hackley.
Peace and blessings, my friends. I am so glad to hear the word solution in the air tonight because it's just that kind of night. So I'm here, and I'm glad to be involved, and of course, we'll be sharing some things, but peace and blessings. And I don't want to interrupt Quentin. I want to make sure that all of what was said, he finishes what was said or what was on his mind there.
Okay, thank you so much. We're being joined now by Dr. Jeremiah Hackley. And Dr. Hackley, just if you could briefly introduce yourself, tell the listeners what you do, and then we're going to go back to the dialogue between George and Quentin.
Yes, I am Dr. Jeremiah Hackley. I'm the writer and author of the letter, which is the exhaustive commentary on the Willie Lynch letter. It explains not only the issues that we faced over the last 400 years as a people, but also the solution that I identified that could be effective for another 400 years beyond this time. And I'm glad we're on the subject of solutions because I do have some things that I can share tonight. But for the listeners, they are able to go and look up the book online. It's on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, as well as a number of other websites that you can purchase the book through. It is called The Letter, Hackley's Exhaustive Commentary on the Willie Lynch Letter. If you put in the letter Hackley, if you Google the letter Hackley, the book will come up, and that's Hackley. You can also visit us at www.kingdomculture.tv, and we have another website that's coming soon, but you can visit us now at that website and communicate with us.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Hackley. Now, back to Quentin. Were you, the things that George was just describing in terms of some solutions, that some ideas that he has, some of which that he's used in the past and others that he may be implementing in the future, was that the type of solution-based ideas that you were looking to hear about, or is there something else in particular? Because I know from our own one-on-one conversations, I kind of know where you're coming from, so.
Well, I think those things are already in place and have been tried, you know. And, you know, I don't want to tune out the gangbangers maybe people that may be on drugs. I don't want to just, you know, throw them out and target the willing crowd, so for lack of better words. You know, I want to target everyone, but my thing is you have to look at what occurred throughout, you know, time to us mentally. You have to take a look at that because it even affects us in politics. You know, it affects every single thing that you do. It's that deep-rooted. So you can't ignore a sickness of that magnitude and think that you're going to even get into a place of politics in someone else's system and think you're going to excel. So that's the problem that I think that we have to address.
I got six solutions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I just wanted to make that statement while you're going. Go ahead, Quentin.
No, so my thing is more targeted toward finding a way that we can have, if we do have some type of community place that we can bring the youths that are in the gangs and the violence and things like that, that we can teach them actually what has occurred to them, because I really don't think they know at this point. So maybe if we do have a type of boys club or something like that to where they could play basketball, we could have some type of classroom setting as well to where they can learn what is also like Dr. Hackley's book. And we can teach, what has occurred to you so that you can understand what mental state that you're in. That's all, that I have right now.
Okay.
Well, can I jump in?
Sure you can.
Yeah. I want to jump in because I want to make six solution-based points, and I want to make them before Dr. Hackley speaks because I want to get his input on it and get his input on what all of us have said collectively as far as our solutions and give him the opportunity to, address whatever his solutions are as a collective effort on what we've all said. But a real quick, Sabrina, I want to go back to something you said about committing selfless acts and things you give your viewers, your listeners a chance to do each week, right? So for me, what I decided to do, what me and my wife decided to do as a selfless act, we decided to find women who are in need, who are not being satisfied, okay? And then I'm to sacrifice my body in a selfless act to give them some. Now, see, I'm a humanitarian. You see? So I believe
you're such a giving person. You're such a charity.
I'm a giving person.
That's the kind of show this is. What the heck? And we ain't Skyping yet. Okay. Just to let the listeners know, Life Radio will be visual, where you'll see me live on camera officially on July 1st. But in the meanwhile,
yeah, I'm a gift.
Erase that visual from your mind.
I mean, if the gentleman can't agree, you got to be a giver. You got to give back.
Okay.
But is that
number one? Can we go to solution number two?
No, that wasn't part of my six solutions.
No.
Okay.
I'm gonna start my six solutions now, and Brother Quentin was really hitting on number three in my solution, but I'm gonna start from number one. Number one with my top six solutions, we have to destroy the myth that the darker skin is bad, evil, or ugly, because that's really how we've been poisoned and been tainted and been manipulated. I have a Facebook friend. She calls herself Black Barbie. She's a model. This is a gorgeous, beautiful, dark-skinned woman, and she models and her beautiful face, beautiful body, everything, okay? We need more of that. We need to see that more because people need to understand that there's beauty there. Because we've been so manipulated with the words in the English language, black male, black bald, black Sunday. We wear black to funerals, but we wear white at weddings. Devil's food cake is black, angel's food cake is white. All these things play a part. They're subliminal, and they kind of warp your thinking. So we have to kind of change that. It's our responsibility to do that, to make sure people understand that dark skin is beautiful, that there's beauty in the darker skin. My second point is we have to understand that this is no longer the industrial age. This is the information age. So we have to teach our kids very young how to awaken their entrepreneurial spirit, how to get them thinking business, starting businesses, okay, doing these different types of things, get in their minds early. I mean, if they want to go into medicine or accounting or law, those are great as well. But we got to get their mind set off education and job. That's not the way the world is right now. We have to change the way we teach our kids early because the world has changed. Number three, and Brother Quentin kept bringing this up, these gangbangers, okay? We have to get these gangbangers who are ignorant, and ignorant don't mean stupid. Ignorant means not knowing, who don't understand that they're angry at the wrong people, and they have to channel their energy in a more positive way. They're so busy arguing and fighting over what they say is their turf. It's not your turf. If it's your turf, why do you run when the police come? You don't own nothing. We have to change the way they think and let them understand how you can acquire ownership, how you can take charge of your community without killing and wrecking up the place. Okay? We have to change that way of thinking. And it's going to be hard to get to these gangbangers and make them understand that because they're hurting their own community and themselves. When you get an abusive person, who do we abuse? Those closest to us. If you follow an abusive person home, he's abusing his family. Okay? You go into a black neighborhood, they're committing crimes, black people are the victims. You go into a Chinese neighborhood, they're committing crimes, Chinese people are the victims. We hurt who's closest to us. So there is no black-on-black crime and these different kind of things. Okay? So number four, we have to teach how to invest in our own communities. I believe $800 million a year goes out of the black community, out to other communities. Yeah. We have to teach on how to invest in our own communities, build up our own banks, those 25 banks that we know of, how to invest in those banks so we can get business loans, real estate loans, things of that nature, car loans, and build up our banks because that's our economic structure. That's where our base needs to be with these banks. So we don't have to keep going to the conventional banks and hearing no all the time. They don't look like you, so most of the time they're going to tell you no. Okay? Number five. We need to learn, and also for number four as well, sorry about that, we have to hold black businesses accountable for bad service, for lackluster service. So if you're receiving lackluster service from a black business, pull them to the side, ask for management, hold them accountable right then and there. We can't accept bad business because, hey, that's my brother, that's my sister, we're sisters, we're all black, it's powerful. No, business is business, and you have to be professional. And I know a lot of black businesses have a tremendously hard time with good customer service. And I'm going to say that on the air, and I don't care who's listening. I don't care who likes it. You do, especially a lot of these Caribbean restaurants. And I love Caribbean food, but your service is horrible. Your customer service is horrible, okay? Number five, we got to teach these kids, young adults, the stock market, the financial pages. Understand stock market, what the Dow Jones is, dividends, price per share, et cetera, and figure out how to play this stock market. People have lost a lot in the stock market. They've committed suicide, blah, blah. They've also earned a lot. They become multimillionaires from playing stock market. We have to learn this game and play it, okay? And the last thing is the forgotten rule of read, read, and read. We don't read. There's an old saying, if a black person robs your house, you think a black person going to break into your house? Hide your money in your books because black folks don't read. Okay? It's a sad joke, but it's a joke, and sometimes it's very true. If you're going to hide your money in your books, they're not going to look in the books. They're going to take the TV. If you break into the house of a wealthy man, this is my last point. You break into the house of a wealthy individual, okay, multimillionaire. Forget his TV. Forget his DVRs. Forget that stuff. I want to know what this man reads. How did he become what he became? I'm going to go into his library and steal every book he got. I ain't worried about his TVs. Okay? So we need knowledge. And as the Bible says, we perish because of lack of knowledge. And I'll finish there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there was before Dr. Hackley starts, there was a caller that from the 651 area code. If he's listening, I want to encourage him to call back. You can do so at 424-220-1862. That number again is 424-220-1862. And you can also join our live chat. You could do so by coming to blogtalkradio.com/BreeLife. Click on my page, look for the chat link, and join me in the chat room. All right, Dr. Hackley, you're up.
I want to say, first of all, that I appreciate everybody's comments and everybody's suggestions, statements, you know, thought, because it takes energy and effort to even think in this direction or to even have a conversation in the nature or manner in which we are having tonight. I want to start out with an agreement to everyone's solution, including my brother Six, a very strategic and specific points. It is probably something very close to what is in my book, because I take in this book, and this is the reason to get the book, with the 247 verses. I've broken the Lynch letter down into 247 verses. But in addition to the 247 verses, there are 247 dimensions of commentary where I deal with every dimension of the enslavement of the mind, and that goes for relationships, to economics, to socialization, to education, to administration, to government, to military. It deals with all of that. But in addition to all of that, there are 247 solutions. I mean, stuff that you can pick up and say, I'm going to go out this morning and do what the book says. Like what you said, the brother made a comment about going out to help women, and we're not going to help them that way, but I have some other suggestions on how to help the sisters, because we do want to help the sisters. I think I might get in trouble if I agree too much with his philosophy, but I do understand where he's coming from. Dr. Hackley, I think what he was trying to do
was really test just how open to conversation you were, because remember I told everyone on air last week that, you know, Dr. Hackley isn't stuffy just because he's a pastor, and that, we on the Bree Life Radio Show, we bring it real and raw. So I think he was just trying to see if that was going to make you blush.
Well, no, my next book is 100 questions about relationships and sexuality, and it is very clear, and it deals with the specifics of what we're going through, and so I'm not timid at all. In fact, I'm probably one of my first books was called Body Heat, 53 Questions About Marriage, Relationships, and Sexuality, and I'm not timid about any of that subject matter, as well as I have a pretty decent sense of humor, and you got to be able to laugh about these things. But I do want to say this, that one of our greatest enemies is fear. One of our greatest enemies is fear, because we have seen this is what has happened. We have been programmed to believe that anybody that rises up in any kind of solution-oriented stimuli for the community will somehow be punished, somehow be somehow be assaulted psychologically or assaulted publicly, assaulted in the media, assassinated somehow, that they will go through that particular challenge if they stand up to help the people. That's a fear of that. There's a fear of failure. There's a fear of being misunderstood. There's a fear of being misconceived. But I want to do this. I want to say that the solution, there is one solution. There is one solution. And I said it last week, and I said it the week before, I'm going to say it again. The solution is called phenomenon. Phenomenon. It is a word that means exhibiting extraordinary activities that cause awe and wonder. Exhibiting extraordinary activities that cause awe and wonder. We do the right thing sometimes, but we don't do it at the right level of intensity. We have the right ideas, but we're not willing to push them to the proper levels. It's not just about, my brother made a great point about being technologically savvy, yes. Being a stock market savvy, yes. But it has to even go further than that, because we must understand this. The word media is actually a Hebrew derivative that means to see, to look upon, to study, or to examine. And what we are dealing with in our culture is a self-orbiting programming, a social programming that causes us to maintain our enslavement. And I have to, if you will allow me, just 1 second to read this paragraph here from the book. The greatest fear, it is called...
Can I ask you to just hold that thought for a moment, because
I will.
From the 651 area code, he's back on the line, and I just want to get their question, comment, or concern real quick.
Absolutely.
Peace and blessings, this is Bree, and you're on 651-329.
651. How y'all doing out there?
Great, great.
We're fine.
Hey,
may I ask who's calling, and what's your question?
It's International Booby. And now I would just like to reiterate on what the brother previously was saying about fear of leadership. You know, a lot of brothers, like he was saying, you know, they start that fear in us of, you know, basically killing our leaders before us and ostracizing them and deporting them. But what we got to understand as brothers is, leadership of brothers is, we shouldn't have any fear. Our life is risked every time we walk out in the street and there's police around and there's other brothers around, and there's other nationalities around that want to literally take off our head. So as we can see in the Trayvon Martin case, we can get killed just going to this corner store. So as far as fear of leadership goes and getting smited down, it's just the same risk, you know. And me and my endeavors, I used to be an ex-street dude or however you want to call it, criminal, blah, 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 blah. And then I got out of the game, but I still have that energy and fire, which I channel and helping my community and being a community leader. So the brothers shouldn't have no fear, because we didn't have no fear when we were out there selling bleep. So we shouldn't have no fear on our community. So all brothers that want to be in a leadership position, go for it, just like you was going for that crack cell or that lady of the night cell. And another point I would like to iterate is brothers are very divided. Like the brother that was talking right now, you know, he's on the intellectual level. He's a doctor. I respect him for that. And he teaches and he maybe nourishes on the black intellect of the community. But brothers like that do not hook up with brothers like me that are on the AK side.
You interject. Okay, well, go ahead. Finish your statement, brother.
Then
go ahead, finish.
Wouldn't be,
that's an assumption.
Right. I can dig it. Like I was saying, brothers on the intellectual level, the college brothers and the street brothers, really need to come together and put their differences aside, because we need both sides. And go ahead. You can say what you want to say, brother.
Well, I want to say this to you. The key to what you're saying is we can never make any assumptions about each other, because we all have the same spiritual experience. It's not just an intellectual thing with me, it's a spiritual thing. I have been the one that has been in the streets. I have buried more people than I can count in my career. First of all, ministry. I'm sitting right now. I'm gonna tell you where I'm sitting. I'm sitting in Southeast Washington, where the murder rate is the highest. I'm sitting right now having this conversation just blocks from Capitol Hill, but yet still in the midst of my brothers. And so I deal with my brothers every day. My hands are dirty. And when I say dirty, I don't mean dirty in the sense of grimy, in the sense of selling drugs or whatever. But I have, I didn't go to school to become a monolith or to become an intellectual. I went to school to get the arsenal that was necessary to combat the problem at both levels. One thing I do agree with what you're saying is we cannot disarm those who have the power or the if a brother sells drugs or if a brother's gangbanging or whatever, the only thing that he's exhibiting is his natural African warrior tendency. We are the only race that is taught to disarm our young men of their tenacity, their drive, their hunger to go after, to get, to seize, to apprehend, to attain, or to protect, or to guard. You know, in times past, there were leaders who came up who taught brothers to keep their armament under control, but yet stay armed, keep a line of defense. And we need to not depend on the government to inspire or to invigorate, or we need not to depend on even outside sources to inspire or invigorate. We must be armed, and we must be dangerous. Dangerous to what? Dangerous to the system that has enslaved us. There is a risk that we take, yes, but in addition to the risk that we take, there is the reward, that we will receive when we go after what has been before us. And so, you know, I tell people, and I don't tell a lot of people this particular issue, this particular story, but when I was young and growing up in my neighborhood, I had two godfathers. And one godfather I was sleeping in the room next to him. We lived up the street from what they call the valley, and the drug dealer, he owed the drug dealer money. The drug dealer came in the back door of the house into the room next to me, and he shot that godfather in the head, in the room next to me, and then coming out of of my adolescence, my other godfather was we were not too far from that particular location in the same vicinity, and he was hit by one car in front of me, and the next car came over and crushed his head in front of me. I watched women that are very close to me in my family getting beat by men in my family. I have watched the drug transactions go on. I've been on, unbeknownst to me, the move with people who were doing things that I didn't even know was going on because I was too young to understand. So I come out of the same trenches as everybody else. I just decided to do something with my energy, and this is the reason why I say, okay, let me put my mind in 576 pages, because my tail has been on the line long enough, and I need to get my tail off the line, and I need to get somebody else's tail off the line. And the best way to change a man's life is to change his mind. I can change his clothes, he's not going to change. I can change his address, he's not going to change. I can change his religion, he's still not going to change until he changes his mind about who he is, what he knows, where he's going, who he relates to, who he's connected to, what he's in this world for, and who he's here to be. And when he does those things, when he becomes both intellectual and manifested physical of the intellect, or metaphysical as we call it, we bring the spirit and we bring the natural together, and we make it a real thing for the people. And so I'm not one of these guys that just behind a desk or a lectern, because at the end of the day, you know, I deal on a very on a daily basis with people who come to my door and they say, Hackley, I don't want to kill them. Here's my gun. Can you do something with it? Because I'm going to kill them. Or Hackley, I got my bottles. I'm going to pour them out, but I don't know what to do after I pour my bottles because I've been addicted so long. I don't know what to do. So when it comes to that kind of service of the people and that kind of grit that deals with the problem of the people, I stand every day and have sacrificed all of the days of my life for that kind of thing, even when I was not aware that I was suffering for the sake of the pressure that was going to be put on me in my adult years to respond to the problems that I experienced in my younger years. And so it is a very grassroots thing. It's a very grassroots thing. Yes, Bree.
Okay. I'm sorry to interject because I want to make sure that we go around the table and get enough of what everybody needs to add to this, but I feel like we almost went to church. So I want to ask the caller, was his question addressed? And
right,
does he do you feel like the good doctor here has addressed your question?
Well, it wasn't really a question, it was some advice. And I wasn't per se talking about him personally. I was talking about the connection, because when we speak sometimes as individuals, and then we might get personal. And I'm not saying that you got personal. I'm just saying that as we are speaking as individuals, there's not getting nowhere. So when I was addressing the question is, and what I wanted you to kind of iterate is, we as brothers from different spectrums, like you're from, you know, not you, sorry about that, a brother that could be intellectual and be in college, and a brother from the street, you have conflict. So just to sum it up in a nutshell, my thing was, one, how can we as black men take that gap and make it narrow so the street brother ain't against the college brother? And two, how can I get your contact information so me and you can network?
Okay. Well, caller, we want to thank you for calling in. I want you to stay online because Dr. Hackley is going to give out all his information at the end of the show. And you'll be able to share that information with him. And I'm also chatting with you in the chat room. So whatever you don't get, if you hear it on the phone, I'll make sure that you get it in the chat room. And I want to thank you very much. I want to thank you very much for coming.
Before you cut me off, I mean not cut me off, but before I put on hold, I would like to know what the solution would be for us as black men to narrow that bridge between street brothers and college brothers. So that's really what I wanted to get out of my call.
Okay. Well, we thank you very much for calling in.
All right.
Hold on.
And thank you for having me.
We get that information to you, okay?
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. Okay, Dr. Hackley, and that was a great call that just took place, and I want to thank the caller, International Booby, too, for calling in and posing that question to the panel. So, Dr.
Yeah.
Hackley, please pick up where you left off, and I want us to be mindful of the time. It is 10:24 Eastern Standard Time. The show ends at 11 o'clock. I'm going to begin wrapping things up at 10:55, so I want us to get all the way around the table by 10:50, okay?
Okay. You want me to answer that question of the caller?
If you could do it really briefly, answer the question,
okay.
And then I want you to continue on with some of the solutions. And then
okay.
I want us to go to George.
Okay. All right. I want to answer that caller very briefly. The bridge is already in our realities. We just must admit that we are connected to one another. Education does not disconnect from experience. And so what you're saying is there's a group of brothers who've had certain experience, and there's a group of brothers who have had another kind of experience. We have to first of all validate something outside of what we have experienced ourselves. So if we are educated brothers, we must validate the experienced brothers. And if we are experienced brothers, we must validate the educated brothers. But let me tell you, this is very clear. You can be experienced and educated and still be a fool because you don't know who you are. And this is where we will connect. The bridge is there's only one black man on this earth, and that's us. There's only one black man on this earth, and that's us. There's only one black woman on this earth. That's Bree. That's Turtle. There's only one black woman on this earth, and we are connected. And there's only one black child. And the reason why I say it that way, there's only one, is because we are steady trying to get numbers to follow and to have people follow us. But at the end of the day, we have got to. We absolutely must. Begin to see ourselves as one. Education is a part of us. Experience is a part of us. That's one dimension of us. We are not one-dimensional people. We are multidimensional. So that's the question. And when it concerns the solution, the greatest fear of the oppressor is that there will eventually be an uprising of liberation, thoughts, action, and phenomenon from the subject of his oppression. We must look at the subject of the oppression. What is the subject of the oppression? The subject of the oppression is that we are enslaved to be economically profitable to the oppressor and to be socially submitted to the oppressor until they find another race or something else to subjugate or somebody else to feed off. So as long as they can continue to get the billions of dollars, as long as they can continue to keep their ratings up, as long as they can continue to keep their attention by putting tokens of black people on movies, tokens of black people in commercials, tokens of black people, blase, blase, whatever, as long as we ignore the subject of the oppression, we will be oppressed. But if we ever pay attention to the subject of the oppression, and the reason why I'm being so generic in my answer is because all activity will stem from a revelation of that subject. When you begin to see where the oppression lies or what it's really focused on, the subject matter, why is it profitable? Now, let me ask this question. Who is it profitable to for our divorce rate to be so high? You know who it's profitable to? The court system. Who is it?
Of course.
Is it profitable to lawyers? Who is it profitable to exploit the women and cause the men to be so sexually driven in their appetite that they deny the spirit or the character or the soul of the women? Who is that profitable to? That's profitable to companies who have made money on the blues, who have made money over the years on the songs of oppression, the songs of depression, the songs of our subjugation. What do we need to do? We need to put solution in everything. What is solution in everything? Solution in the music that you write. Solution in the poetry that you write. Solution in the shows that you have. Anything you have, if you're going to state the problem, go far enough to finish the thought and give the solution to the problem. If we do that. Now, there's so much that I cannot say it all. There's too much for me to say it. But the greatest thing our enemy fears is that we get a revelation of the subject of our oppression. And then there's so much more because I deal with each dimension of phenomenon in the book of phenomenon. Phenomenon is the solution. If you're going to do right in a hurricane manner. If you're going to solve something, don't solve it for one woman. Solve it for 100. If you've got enough money, however long your money is, do that. However much energy you have, do that. Do it in a hurricane manner. Become the wind. Become the north, the south, and the east, and the west wind to your community, to your street, and do something that nobody's expecting. When I was 16 and 17 years old, I would go, and I would go clean up people's yards who didn't ask for me to clean up. I would knock on their door and say, do you need some help cleaning up your house? Because I was crazy, but my thought was, I've got to do something to help. I've got to do something to stabilize. Well, the only thing that's going to happen is a conversation is going to start, and people are going to start telling you more about what they're going through, and you're going to have to be what the Bible calls a drink offering. You got to pour yourself out on a daily basis to these people. This generation of leaders and adults have to be a drink offering. We're not going to be able to get in the glory of everything that's going to come out of this, but we're going to absolutely be able and be offered the opportunity to pour into someone, and I'm going to pass that to George.
Okay, I wanted to go back to George because I wanted to make sure that when you were addressing some of the things that Quentin had brought up, that you had had an opportunity to get all your solutions out. So I just want to confirm, had you finished or?
Yeah, I had finished. I pretty much got them all out, and many of them were said by your esteemed panel anyway, so I got us all out there.
Okay. Quentin, are you still with us? Quentin?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay. I'm Quentin, now, you and I have had many one-on-one conversations. We've talked about these things. We've talked about, you know, non-for-profit organizations that we were even thinking about start. What do you think? Because I know that a lot of the panel have touched on things that you agree with, but I also know that there is a more granular vision that you have about the solution. Would you like to talk about that now, because I know for a fact that all of the things that we've talked about haven't been discussed yet, and I haven't talked about my solutions. So if you want to just share with us maybe some of your thoughts about what has been said or, you know, what you think should be done in the community.
Well, I mean, we covered such a large, we covered a lot of ground. So, I mean, a lot of it did get covered, you know, as far as especially uniting and trying to educate one another is really the main focus. And I think, you know, everybody, you know, touched on that. So I think everybody's in unison on the unity and the educating of one another and maybe some, you know, some people who need it. But I do really think that it wouldn't be as hard as we think it is to get some of the younger brothers that are on the streets to jump on, because one of the main things they need to see, and I know this from experience, is just a path. A lot of them are not even happy with the choices that they made as being in gangs and on the streets. They were forced there. So if they see a good path and they see, I guess, a mentorship, you know, then I guarantee you they'll take that route. So, but I do like, you know, the things that everyone has said tonight. So, yeah, I think it got covered.
Okay. Well, some of the things that I'm sorry. Did someone want to say something?
No, that was me, Bree, and I didn't want to cut you off.
Well, okay.
I'm sorry. This is Dr. Hackley. I was just going to say that what I would suggest, what I really would suggest is, this, we are at a very pivotal point in the conversation tonight, and whatever we say tonight, I would encourage every panelist that is on tonight to not only put your solutions into words, but put those solutions down on paper and put them into what I call programming. If you can put them on paper, I don't care whether it's a book, whether it's an outline or whatever, but whatever you have personally, I would encourage everyone to put it on paper and put it on programming, because I really do believe that we have hit the heart of the matter, and if we make the right efforts with whatever is going to be said and whatever has been said, if we don't just let it be words over the air, but we make sure it's ongoing and it's activated, I personally believe that it will be favored, by the Creator. He will favor it, God will favor it, and there will be there's somebody designed for what you have to offer, that their ears are designed for what you have to say, their mm-hmm. abilities, their gifts, and their talents are designed for what you have to offer to solving the issue, because it's not going to come through just one of us, but it's going to come through all of us. And again, Bree, if it was mm-hmm. not for you, we would not be here tonight, because you chose to use a media position, and like you said, you weren't in school for journalism, but at the same time, you might not have thought you were in school for journalism, but God was taking you through your own journalism preparation, so that when you came over the airways, you sound just like you've been on here for many years. So I really have an appreciation for your God-given experiential natural ability to connect with people at all levels. So I appreciate that, Bree.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Hackley, for sharing your views on what Bree Life Radio and what I'm trying to really accomplish with the show, which is a perfect segue for what I'm about to say, because it's sort of synonymous with what Dr. Hackley was saying with regards to putting an action plan in place. When I chose the panelists that you hear tonight and that you've heard for three nights over a three-week period, I strategically chose them, because I felt that each one of these gentlemen had something to offer all of us collectively as a group. And there is a project that I'm beginning to spearhead. It's for a non-for-profit organization, and it's to touch on many different levels of things that I think the community at large really needs. That action place, that action plan that Dr. Hackley was talking about, and this relationship that we have started here is not going to end when the show is over. I'm going to be counting on assistance and motivation and help and grassroots help from everybody that's online and anyone who's listening that wants to participate in this project. I want to talk about some of the solutions that I feel that are important and that will be infused in the project that I'm trying to spearhead. One of those things is that, and Quentin and I, we've talked about this a lot. I know Dr. Hackley mentions it in his book. Alex and I have talked about it, and even George has touched on it. In order to, just like Dr. Hackley said, and I say all the time, think of the Bugs Bunny cartoon with Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd in Central Park, and the hats are falling from the sky. And every time a hat fell on their head, their personality changed. But that's not going to be enough. We can't have hats falling from the sky. But we have to work on people from the inside out. We have to start changing their mind with how, not how they view the world, but how they view themselves, because that is what's going to motivate their behavior to change. We have to work on behaviors. So they're behavior specialists that I'm going to bring into the group to begin to help people understand that they have behaviors that need to be addressed. Because once these behaviors are addressed, guess what's going to change? You're going to see a change in the community because men are going to start respecting women. Women are going to start respecting men. The children are going to start respecting their parents. And we're going to be able to work together consistently to get things done. So that's number one. Educating our children is so very, very important. And I have to go back to thinking about my father. God rest his soul. My father would have been, tomorrow is his birthday. May he rest in peace. He would have lived to be 83 years old had he lived. And for the years that I had him, I was very lucky because from at the time that I could pick up a book, my father insisted that I read. Just like Alex shared with us earlier, that it's very important for us to read and for us to know about our history so that we could better understand who we are. But we can't just go on ancient history because the world has changed considerably since 6,000 years ago. We need to be up to date with what's going on. We need to be educated with regards to technology. We not only do we need to read, we need to do a lot of developing, being able to use arithmetic, because there are children and adults that don't know basic arithmetic. So how are you going to manage money if you don't know how to count, if you don't know how to multiply? You have to be able to have the basic skills so that you can improve upon yourself. All this is about self-improvement. And once you can improve yourself, you can do anything outside of yourself. So educating children, having them read history, having them read about philosophy and different things, having them know who they are. Accountability. I'm holding everybody on the line here. Now that we've forged this relationship, now that we've forged this networking space, that we collectively keep each other accountable for the things that we know that we have the capacity to give back to our communities. And we should constantly be checking in with each other, asking one another if, you know, do you need any help with a particular project? Or when you know that something is coming down the pike and you know one of us has a skill set that we could reach out to our brother, or you could call your sister and ask them what they think. That is good networking. That's what they do. That's how they get laws passed. That's how they get things done. That's how this capitalistic society runs. You should, like Alex said, sometimes you need to emulate the things that are being done by others to become as equally, if not more, successful. So you want to do that. And just, you know, let's keep it real. Just asking for basic help, it seems like it is so difficult to do with one another, with your neighbor, or reaching out to a person. You know, when I selected George Cook to come on as a panelist, I had no previous relationship with him. He just happens to be one of the people that I friended on Facebook. But when I did research about, you know, what he does in his community, I was like, this is a man that I really want to get on the show because he has some good things to say and he has some good information to share with us at large. So I took a chance. You know, I didn't know what his schedule was. I didn't know if he was going to be one of those difficult politicians and community activists that you got to go through 10 people just to get him on the phone. The same thing with Dr. Hackley. You know, I had no idea that it was just going to be as easy as sending a note and then and having them respond. So that was a chance that I took. You have to take the same type of chance with the people that are in charge of running and organizing things in your community. You have to hold them accountable. Just like George said, just like Alex said, you have to hold these people accountable. So call your local assemblyman or councilman or woman. Call your local senator. If you have something going on your block that you don't like, call them. We have to start from the ground up in order to work out a lot of these problems. And we have to put action in place. We can't just keep talking and talking and talking about the same thing over. Like my father used to say, cold gravy warmed over. That's no good anymore. You know, our society at large is at risk all the way across the board. So we need to do some collective things, and we need to start reaching out to people even outside of our communities, because George lives in Jersey. Dr. Hackley is in D.C. Alex is in Virginia. And I live in Brooklyn. So what does that tell you? I wasn't afraid to reach out. Let's not be afraid to reach out and get the type of help and assistance and get questions answered and start walking into the public schools. I'm working with a public school that, I attended when I was 11 years old, but I don't live in that community. I don't have a child that's in that elementary school, but I know that there's some issues in the school that need addressing, like school supplies. What a thing to have to, for a teacher to have to be facing on a daily basis. So I felt that I would spearhead the effort to try to raise funds for that. And when someone I'm a little tongue-tied. When someone asks for assistance with fundraising efforts, you know, if you could give a dollar, if you could give $10, if you could give $100, whatever you could give, it's for your community. You have to start thinking about investing in your community, investing in your people, and not worrying about the handbags and the shoes and the clothes, because all these things depreciate, but you're still living in the community. What about the abandoned or the buildings that are not being occupied? You know, if we talk about wanting to do things in the community, but there's no place to house these type of meetings, well, maybe going to your community leader and asking them if you can use some space in a public school or in a community board office, or going to your local church. There's basements, there are meeting rooms in churches. Ask the pastor, the priest, the minister, the rabbi, you know, can we hold a meeting once a month in this room, because we don't have any other space in the community? There's a lot of just small things that would make a difference. I don't know, you know, if anyone on the panel kind of agrees with some of the things that I'm saying, but these are my thoughts.
Well,
that's what I'm doing from the grassroots.
Yeah.
Foundation for what I'm trying to get accomplished in my community.
Yeah, and you know, Bree, what you're saying is very poignant, because a little goes a long way. You know, Mahatma Gandhi said, you know, become the change in the world that you want to see. Okay, whatever change you want to see, you become that. Okay, Muhammad Ali says, don't count the days, make the days count. Okay,
right.
All these statements are very poignant, and when you have a neighbor or somebody that's in need, you'd be surprised what a cup of coffee and a donut would do for some people. It will go a long way in restoring their morale, their faith in humanity. Okay, if you haven't accessed some food, check with your neighbor. Y'all okay over here? We have a little bit, you know, extra, whatever. Those things go a long way at making people believe that there's still good in the world. It starts one step at a time, you know, and that's where it has to start, because, you know, we as a community, black people in general, as a whole, We don't trust one another. But humanity as a whole don't trust one another. Okay, there's really a lack of distrust that began up top because we're so manipulated from up top that now us on the bottom of the totem pole, so to speak, don't trust each other, and they're up there laughing because they're just watching the game being played or they're watching their plans come to fruition. Okay, so we have to take all that back and restore that humanity in one another to say, I will feed you. I have a few extra clothes. Instead of putting them in garbage bags, throwing them in the garbage, I'm going to give you this bag of clothes, okay, so to speak. So those things we have to do. You know, we have very little time left. We had a lot of solutions on the phone today from all the callers. The brother that called in made a great point about tying in the street-level gangbanger and the intellectual brother. Okay, and that's going to happen by way of openness because both of them have a lot to offer. You know, you can't take a street thug for granted and say, oh, he's just a street guy. These are very intelligent people. They just channel their energy in the wrong place. They're angry at the wrong things or the wrong people, but they're extremely, extremely intelligent. They have great survival instincts, okay, and they can actually teach the intellectual brother something, and the intellectual brother can teach them a lot about what's going on in business, what's going on in the world as a whole. So we have to close that gap. So the brother that called made a great point, and I'll leave it there.
One other thing that I'm going to say, and then I'm going to let the person, I'm not quite sure if it's Dr. Hagley or George, say what they have to say. We have to start educating ourselves so that we can be shining examples for our children. We have to. We can no longer afford to live in this world and not have some level of education. And I don't mean going to college. I don't mean going to a community college or anything like that. I mean picking up a Forbes magazine, the New York Times, looking at the news. We have to know what's going on in the world around us so that we can better prepare our children. It's so very, very important. I can't stress it enough. Dr. Hagley that wanted to say something?
I just wanted to touch real quick on the book smart versus the street smart, and I'm like caught between both, and I think it all goes back to respect. We have to have respect for one another as human beings and as men, first and foremost. That brother on the street, like I said, he's very intelligent. If he's been dealing drugs, he probably understands assignment, supply and demand, inventory demand, probably his middle management material, but he just, at some point in his life, decided to go the right way. So we have to learn to respect each other and include everybody. And the one thing that's real quick is fear of success was mentioned. And fear of failure. You cannot have a fear of failure because in life you're going to fail more than you're going to succeed. But if you don't try, you will never succeed. You can't be scared to fail. You can't be scared to fail because if you don't try, you won't succeed at all. And I think that if nothing else, people need to take that away with them tonight.
Okay. Dr. Hagley? Thank you, George.
I want to say thank you, George, for that. Brother, I want to also say something interesting happened while I was sitting here in the conversation. I'm sitting out here, and I'm on my way down to the Capitol, and I was sitting in this particular parking space, and a family of deer just walked right in front of me. They are naturally looking for food together. They're naturally on their way somewhere together, and it was four of them, And I said this, and I shared this last week, and I shared this, and I'm going to share it again this week. Know thyself. A father comes from the Greek word pater, which means patriarch. He's a pattern giver. A mother comes from the Greek word mater or mater, which means to mature, and she is the matriarch of the family. We have a patriarch. We have the matriarch. We have a son. Comes from the Greek word bane. Bane means builder of, or Hebrew word, bane. Bane means builder of. And the daughter, Bath, B-A-T-H, means the glory of, or to accentuate and extend or expand. Now, these are the dimensions of a family unit. These are the dimensions of a family unit. Whether we are intellectual, whether we are experienced. I'm not going to say street. I'm going to say experience, because everybody has a different dimension of experience. The streets of Mississippi are different than the streets of Brooklyn. The streets in Ghana are different than the streets in Minnesota, and we all got the same color skin. But the challenge to what we deal with in those streets and in those classrooms, because you're talking about a system that's been designed to educate us into the enslavement, which means there's still a fight in the classroom. Classroom don't mean easy. Classroom mean you're going to deal with the demon that's been enslaving you from its highest level of enslavement. You're going to have to go into the boardroom and face the person that's actually financing the problem. You're going to have to be able to sit with the people that are actually legislating the problem on the day-to-day basis. And so there's a war at all levels. There's a war on all levels. And there are three levels of war that we're in. We're in a war against alienation, which means to have our bodies in it but our minds not. We're in a war against subjugation, which means that the best out of us is being taken out of us and someone else is profiting off of it. And we're in a war against gentrification, which means that both our bodies and our minds and our goods are being taken from us, and the only thing that we have left is a memory of who we were. If we do not get up and get a revelation of who we are today, I'm not talking about our past leaders. I'm not talking about what Martin did or Malcolm did. Who are you? Who is George? Who is Bree? You can never change history, but you can always make history. But it takes energy and effort to make history. It takes the ability to see the risk and keep on pressing forward. And when you make history, you will be remembered for who you are, not just what you did. And if you know who you are, you'll be remembered for who you are. And then the other thing, Bree, that I have to say this, because I did not put 10 years of my life into this book for it to sell a million copies. I put 10 years of my life into this 576-page book for somebody to pick up and say, okay, I got a map. There are, Bree, I made it so clear that there are charts, there are tables, there are it's outlined. It's not a hard read. It's not 576 pages of just words, but there are pictures, there are explanations, there are references. The Constitution is in the back of the book. The Negro National Anthem is in the appendix. The history of faith since the first ships are up until now are in the book. There are so many resources in the book that I can't even name all the resources. But if you really want to start somewhere, if you really want to start, and I can't speak for a whole lot of other people. There are a lot of other writers and things of that nature. I can speak for myself tonight. I know that I was born for this particular time, and I believe that what I have to say is just as important as any other writer out there. And the other thing that you have to do is do exactly what I'm doing right now. Believe in what you do. Believe in what you're saying. Believe in what, because it's a crazy thing to be doing something and you don't believe in it yourself. It's a crazy thing to get up in the morning and you're going to give some money to somebody and you don't even realize why you're giving them a donut or why you're giving them money. Put your heart in what you do. Put your heart into what you do. We cannot be a callous people. We've got to do, there's something that there is no law against. The Bible says there's no law against love. And we absolutely have to.
And on that note, Dr. Hackley, I'm going to have to end the show.
Yes.
But I want to thank the panel. It's been an awesome 3 weeks. I'm bringing you guys back. Next week, we're talking about family court issues. We're talking about child support and child custody issues. So I want to invite anyone that's on the panel that wants to participate. And I want to let everyone know that I really appreciate the support and the love that I've been getting for what we're trying to do here at Bree Life Radio. And I want to tell you all in closing the show that I want you to go on tonight and have a lot of blessings. And I love you all on purpose. Good night, everyone.
Love you, Bree.
Good night.
Love you, too.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Yeah, yeah. A-Dream. In the building. Shout out to Bree.
What up, Bree?
And we finna go in. Look.
Yes, sir.
Look. We came to break down a few topics here. So if you got time, sit and acknowledge it. It's positive, uplifting, and honest here. Keep your ears open and soaking all the words spoken. A couple of jokes to keep it fun, get your laugh on. And maybe a few pointers to get your cash on. See, Bree, she all about building. Straight up out the NY, Brooklyn in the building. All the way down to the southern states. West Coast on up to the Great Lakes. So you fragging echoes, so if you ain't fragile, through the net connection, we streaming you to Mexico.
So welcome to the life of Bree, breaking down the next to the third degree.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live in life.
From politics to current events, economics to race, whether you're poor or you're rich.
This is the Bree life, what you live in life.
Welcome to the Bree life,
how we live.